Welcome back, ladies. This is Yiftach part 5. Now, let's recap for a very just a brief moment here. And that is the following. What we did last time was we're trying to consider what Yiftach was doing. What we took a few steps backwards to try to appreciate historically in the Torah, is there a precedent that Yiftach is relating to as a neder? Has nedarim been used in the past? We identified a few times. And then finally, what we tried to understand was what the text was telling us. That was our discussion last time, was what the text is indicating. The text indicates a bit of an ambiguous piece, right? Because on the one hand, the text seems to be indicating on the one hand that it's a death-oriented. It sounds like he's killing her. But on the other hand, it does seem to be that he's mourning her, the loss of her marriage or her relationship with any man. So, like, it's very unclear what Yiftach was doing and what he was thinking. And we sort of explored a lot last week, well, 2 weeks ago, what was really going on over there. What we ended off with, as a final conclusion, was the words of the Ramban. And he said something quite incredible. And he said that the problem was that when the Torah talks about neder, there are really two tracks. There's a track when it comes to personal possession or when it comes to other people. When it comes to something in your sphere of control, so it might be your possessions or a person in your household, perhaps. If it's your possessions, you're going to make it holy for God. If it's somebody in your household, you're saying that person, potentially maybe certainly a baby at least, now that was the difference we discussed, that is going to be somehow designated to God. But nothing about, you don't have the right to kill anybody in your household, to make that clear. but, the Ramban says when it comes to other people, like when you're attacking another nation and you declare them a cherem, you make that cherem on them, in that instance what you're essentially saying is, I'm not going to take anything from it, I'm going to give it to God, I'm going to burn it all down, raise it to the ground, and that's it. And so what happened was, Yiftach was, he got a little bit confused. He made a cherem of somebody in his house, but he thought that it had the same stringence, it had the same degree of a person who would have to be killed or eliminated, and he applied that to his daughter. And so therefore, at the end of the day, according to the Ramban, we came out, was Yiftach correct in any sense of the word?
No.
Absolutely no. Meaning, Yiftach was confused, Yiftach didn't know enough, and this was a blatant mistake. The Ramban goes so far as to say, and this is such a terrible tragedy, he says, so far to say that in fact, the neder didn't have any halachic ramifications whatsoever. Meaning, it was hot air. He had such misconceptions that what he did actually had no effect whatsoever on his daughter. And that's the tragedy. So he's sitting there thinking he's bound to something which doesn't even have any form of existence. That's what we left off with. But that leaves Yiftach in a very difficult corner, and it leaves us in a very difficult corner. And we also had to consider like the society and what people were doing. What was going on? There's so many silent people in this instance. So what I want to focus on right now is to pull to the other side of the spectrum and see that maybe some of the rationale which he might have been employing, and perhaps something else was going on. Okay, so that's where we start. Now, what we're going to direct our attention to this evening is an Ibn Ezra. Rabbeinu Avraham, the son of Ezra. Now, the problem is that the Ibn Ezra is not extant, meaning we don't have a copy of it. However, the place we find him is in a quotation of the Ramban himself. The Ramban is famous for quoting the Ibn Ezra throughout the Torah, and he quotes him usually to disagree with him, usually very vociferously to disagree with him. In this instance, it's no different, but in this instance, we actually don't have it in the Torah, so we can't really relate to him in his own words, but we at least have the Ramban's presentation of him. Okay, so just bear in mind, the Ibn Ezra may have said something different, but this is the way the Ramban understood him. So if I could direct your attention to page 11, we're going to do the last two paragraphs in the top box, where it's entitled Mistake of Yiftach and the Ibn Ezra in brackets. Okay, that's going to be this section. We followed the Ramban, now we're going to try the Ibn Ezra. It says, "V'al tihi nifte b'havlei Rabbeinu Avraham." That's pretty severe language. Pretty severe language, right? So he says, "Don't be seduced by the emptiness of Rabbeinu Avraham." You're referring to Rabbeinu Avraham Ibn Ezra, the Ibn Ezra. So he really does. He thinks it's havalim, emptiness. What does he say? Ha'omer ki pirush v'alisiu olah What was Yiftach saying when I'm going to bring that which walks out of my door as an ola, as a sacrifice? He expands it to mean, oi v'ha'alisiu ola, or I will sacrifice it as an offering. Okay, that doesn't sound too monumental. That doesn't sound too much of a difference. What difference does it make if you say it that way or not? It says, Lomar, im yihyeh hayotze midal se beisi, ish o isha, vayala Hashem, kodesh, shiyeparush midarkei ha'olam, na'amod l'shares b'shem Hashem. That he says that if it's going to be a person who walks out of my doors, then you know what's going to happen? That person is going to be sanctified, dedicated to God, they'll be separate. And what will they will do to serve in front of God, b'tfilah v'hodaos, in praise and in prayer, le'elokim, to God, v'miyeh davar ra'uy likarev a'alenu ala. But if, option two, if it's something which is sacrificable, meaning a goat, or, yeah, any animate object which is not human, then I would sacrifice it. And what happened in the end? So what actually happened? So what did he do? He made a house for his daughter outside the city limits. V'his bodadasham, and she was in solitary confinement there. V'kilkola kol yomeha, and he financed her, he supported her. V'ish lo yada'a, v'hisav v'tzoy tzurura, and his daughter was bound up, and she never, meaning essentially she had no life socially or intimately. She lived a very alone existence. So the story is being retold over here completely, right? You see, this is the Ibn Ezra's got a completely different view as to what Yiftach had in mind and as to what actually happened. Okay, now this is very interesting. There's a lot to like think about over here. There's like a lot of different pieces. So first of all, what is the change? What word is the important word that's changed over here in Ibn Ezra, in the words in the text? He's v'halitzio, right? So the word now is, before the words of Yiftach were the following: whatever comes out of my doors, I will be to God, and I will bring them up as an offering. So now we thought that was all one thing. So whatever walks out of my doors, I'm going to take and I'm going to sacrifice to God, because the last part says v'halitzio ola, means I'm going to bring them up as a sacrifice. That's how it sounds like. Says the Ibn Ezra, no. There's two sections, two options. Option number one, Kodesh LaHashem, or option number two, depending on what walks out, then it could be that it's a sacrifice. That's what Ibn Ezra does. So he's like he's dividing up Yiftach's, he's passing up Yiftach's words, and now the reality expresses that. So Ibn Ezra, now just let's think about this for a moment. What in the text supports the Ibn Ezra? What in the text, besides for this way he's dividing up the word "the" or the word into "or"? What textual support do we have for this? Like what? Let's leave the questions. Let's discuss though.
Oh.
I'm sorry. Were you saying?
I thought maybe there was a comma after whoever comes out will be Kodesh, and then Ibn Ezra would say there's a comma, and then v'ha'alisihu, something else will be sacrificed.
Uh-huh.
Comma v'ha'alisihu.
So explain again. How's the reading then?
That v'ha'alisihu was referring actually to a sacrifice, which
yes.
is separate from.
Correct.
The notion of whatever's coming
correct.
Out.
Correct. Exactly. That's exactly what he's saying. But the text itself, there's no punctuation. So, meaning he's left to work out whether it's an or an and. But in the actual story itself, what gives us the indication that he's right, perhaps?
Oh, I think he's right.
What indication do we have?
Because his daughter is not sacrificed. His daughter is, it's almost like, because of the fact that she lives alone, maybe that was his way of having her serve God.
Okay,
in
that's
a spiritual way.
That's what Ibn Ezra is saying. That's what Ibn Ezra is saying. But notice that in the text itself, when describing what he did to her, if you just flip back to page 5 for just a moment, this is the pasuk. This is the pasuk, you know, where you have the circumstantial evidence. You know, you have the, you know, lahavdil, the blade at the door with the, you know, the blood on it, kind of thing. This is all we're left with. There's an lametes. In 39, at the end of 2 months, where she's with her friends and crying, she returns to her father, and what happens? And he did to her his neder, his word, asher nadar, v'hi lo yada ish v'tehi chok b'Yisrael. He did his neder. Now that's very ambiguous, right? You see, it doesn't say he killed her.
Right.
He didn't pull out any knives. It sounds like over here that he did what he said, which leads Ibn Ezra to say, so what did he do? But and what's the end of the pasuk? The end of the pasuk is she didn't marry anybody.
Exactly.
So Ibn Ezra says it sounds like what was the punishment or the application of his word was, is in a certain sense solitary confinement.
But
that's what it sounds like.
The next pasuk says that, and then, you know, all the daughters of Israel went and, you know,
and
mourned
for
her. But if you're sacrificing your, you know, life to Hashem, well, that's not necessarily the kind of Jewish ethics to do. You know, like, that's not what we do.
Good, so this brings up...
That's something to mourn over.
Great, good point. So that's exactly one of the things the Ramban brings up. And up to now, the Ramban has simply presented the Ibn Ezra. Completely different track. We're in a completely different world. The reality is actually different. And now the questions with it. Now, but before we even just get to the question, something just worthwhile considering, and that is that that Chazal do have an opinion. Chazal, as adopted by Rashi, is that he actually killed her, like the Ramban understands. Okay, so even Ezra is the divergent in this sense from Chazal, as many Mefarshim do. But the Chazal understood that it was literal. He said he's going to sacrifice her. That was it. And that's what happened. And that's what the Ramban says, and that's why the Ramban paints him so guilty. The Ramban says that there's no ground to stand on. The Ibn Ezra already is moving away from that, just to be aware. The Ibn Ezra is moving away from the Chazal way of looking at it, which gives him now the space to be able to create this, the way he understands what went on. Now, why was he wrong, says the Ramban? Remember, we're in the Ramban territory. So this is the last paragraph on page 11, in the white box. He says the following. Ve'elu divrei ruach. These are words of wind, meaning empty, right? Why? Ki im neder shiyeh lo Hashem, im nadar shiyeh la Hashem, einenu shiyeh parush. When you say you bring something to God, it doesn't mean to say that you're separated from this world. Right? Just you hearing the reverberations here. Aval yiyeh kmo Shmuel shomar imra imoynes nasatziu la Hashem vayemeshar reis beveis Hashem. What happened when Chana, the mother of Shmuel the prophet, said, my child is going to be to God. What happened? What did he do? He went and he was involved in society. He just lived in the house of God. And he was earmarked for service in the temple. Lo parush doesn't mean to say that he didn't experience this world. Right? Ukafi mishpatei Torah. Now, look, this is not clearly saying it. According to the Torah culture, the Torah system of ethics, Ein b'yad adam shi'adu b'yotzei pesach be'eso shi'yeh perushim. You don't have the right to do that to somebody. Right? Meaning, as far as the Ibn Ezra went in understanding Yiftach, that's still wrong. You can't do that to somebody. You don't have the right to say to a person you can't live in this world. Chana might have had the right to say about her child that this child will have a special dedicated job. But you can't say about another person that they're not going to get involved in this world. And just as much as you don't have God didn't give you the jurisdiction to the signing power for anything to be able to do that to somebody, whether killing them or leaving them as in a nunnery or whatever else it may be. This is an interesting argument the Ramban says. He argues further. If it's true, according within the Ibn Ezra's logic, that what happened over here was he was just trying to give her to God. And that's a good thing. In the Ibn Ezra's logic. So what they're doing, crying. Meaning, they're crying because she can't have a relationship with anybody. But wait a second, the Ibn Ezra's framework, that's good. That's praiseworthy. Why are they crying 4 days a year? You see, this is within his logic. Right? Wait a second. And then, in your logic, she's serving God in purity, right? That seems like the ultimate, right? Then why are you crying about it? The Ramban doesn't agree with that logic, right? Ultimately, he says that's not the way we do things. But within his logic, it doesn't make sense as well. Interesting to note before we just stop to think together is the following. Is you turn back for one page just to a paragraph of the Abarbanel. Abarbanel says such an interesting historical note. The Abarbanel living in the 1500s, a little bit of a perspective of Europe, certainly Western Europe, living in Spain, moving afterwards a little further east, said the following. This is in the Abarbanel is two-thirds of the way down. And it's in like sort of the text, which is hard, a little harder to read, he says, from the period. The Kavanasoi, and the logic is over here, Shemizeh Lamdu, Eshes Edom, the woman of Edom, meaning Christian woman learned from this, La'asos Bote Precious, to make houses of separation, which he says is a, what's that word?
Nunnery.
But look, what's the word he uses?
A cloister.
Cloister, you see that? He says in Hebrew there, this is a cloister, Lenashim, for women, Shikan Sushama, that they will stay there, right? V'lo yatzu misham kol yameihem, and they won't leave there their entire lives, v'lo yir'u ish ba'od v'chayim v'chiyusam. And they won't ever engage in this world in the form of a relationship. Now, that's interesting. So, the Abarbanel says that this whole setup over here was what led, perhaps, or this practice or this culture was what led to the culture that you see in certain Christian circles. You have to consider this. So is Abarbanel saying that's good, bad, yes, like us, not like us? Not clear, right? It sounds like, the way he's describing it, that it's like what the Ramban is saying, is that that's not part of the rubric of our culture, right? That's not what we're telling people to do. We're not telling people to leave society and spend your life in solitude. That's not the way we're doing it. And he says that's why it's a Christian adoption in a misinterpretation. Says the Ramban, who misinterpreted it in the first place?
Oh,
Ibn Ezra. Right, so meaning the Ramban is saying that the Ibn Ezra is giving space for such conclusions to be made. Mm.
But Ibn Ezra is not necessarily saying it's a good thing, though, because he's obviously they are quarreling, right. So he's the one who's actually saying.
You're right. The Ibn Ezra hasn't judged it. Right. The Ibn Ezra hasn't judged it, but it seems like the way he's presenting it, the Ibn Ezra says that there was rationale for Yiftach.
There was rationale, but on the other hand, the fact that everyone went and cried for her, and Ibn Ezra knows that, but the next pasuk says that. Suggest that maybe it wasn't a good thing.
Correct. So not clear how much of a judgment call he's making on that. The Ramban certainly dismisses him because of that.
Right.
So you what you could do, just to be fair, is you could invest yourself in the logic of Ibn Ezra and say that the tragedy was that Yiftach himself misunderstood this point. Right. Right? That could be the way you go. Yes, okay.
I think that he really killed her, meaning
right.
that by the fact that she cannot have any more children...
That was her death.
And that's a death. And the mourning of the 4 days is mourning the death of although he didn't kill her physically, he did kill...
He killed her potential, everything she could
exactly.
be.
Exactly.
And that's exactly and the that's, point. That's why nunneries are like not our thing.
Correct. So interesting enough, so what you're saying is that in a certain sense, and this is a very tenable approach, which is essentially taking the Ibn Ezra's idea and sort of what we just did, which is saying that yes, that's exactly what he intended, and he was wrong. Right, and therefore he created a situation where he essentially killed her. Right, for all intents and purposes, he killed her because he has a young woman who has potential, not just in family building, just that's one element of it, but a social being. Meaning, she's no longer in society now, she can't interact with people. That might also be part of why the girls are going, went spent those 2 months with her, crying with her, because maybe that was the last opportunity she had to be with her friends, maybe as well. So within that context. So you see something very interesting over here. But what we do gain from this is, well, it's something very interesting, and that is that within this approach, however wrong or right, at least we know that Yiftach is a lot, it's more easy to understand Yiftach, at least, in this framework. You see what we've gained here? Is within the Ramban, he's so completely obtusely wrong. And it's so egregious and so terrible, the tragedy is just almost too hard, too much to bear. In the Ibn Ezra, we have a very, you know, definitely a misconstrued truth and a terrible tragedy, but the grossness is not as huge. There was something. Let's just take all the questions at this point.
Dina had a thought.
Couldn't he take it back? Like you could, Yom Kippur.
Great. Okay. Great. Good question. We're gonna have to deal exactly with that, and that's the next stage. Is the aftermath. It seems so silent.
Or something in its stead.
Right, meaning this should really have been sorted out, right? That's the question we're bothered by. So yes, we're going to deal with that exactly, because the story is too quiet.
Right, it's interesting actually, Nuri, because I was thinking about that, believe it or not. I know you're shocked to hear that, but I was. And I was thinking how in that day and age, when people made a neder, they never took them back. I mean, maybe they did and I'm not aware of it, but it seems that when they said it was like, I don't know. I mean, I agree with you. I think that you.
But they could have brought something in instead. Like he could have said, okay.
I think when somebody's a Am Haaretz, he either looks at it as black
or white, and nobody's going to tell him anything.
Right, Dina's got a very good point.
So weren't there any rabbis?
Okay, good. These are all excellent questions. You see, everything's unwinding. Where's the society? What there is actually within halacha, there is the opportunity of removing a neder. By the way, in nedarim, the halachas work the following: that if a person makes a neder, and they say they're going to do something or refrain from certain something else, so in that instance, a person can get rid of the neder in two ways. Option number one is the following: I remember the one great case is a young girl goes to Israel, and she comes back and she says she makes a neder that she's always going to stand during davening. And 6 years later, she's pregnant with twins in the middle of summer during Matos Masei, right? and there she is standing in the women's section saying, why did I take on this neder, right? So this is a case that I'm mentioning. And so in that instance, it's too late then. Meaning the dispensation a husband is given is only specific nedarim that relates to the intimate relationship, and specifically when she makes it married to him, and within a day. Okay, so it's a very limited clause. So there's a lot of ways to get it out. One option is the following: is that you can say, well, look, when I made the neder, when I said I was going to stand all the time during all davenings, all Kriyas HaTorahs, I didn't realize what it would be like to be in the middle of the summer, pregnant with twins, and standing for the longest parasha of the year. So what's happening over here is this was called a Pesach. What you're saying is that there's information which I didn't know would be true when I was making this. I didn't have all the information necessary to know when I was 18 years old, walking off the plane, to know what the full extent of my neder. That's what's called a Pesach, right? That's option number one. Option number two is the following, is that you say, look, in the end of the day, all the information is there. There's nothing else we can uncover. We can go round and round. Look, we know that you knew everything you knew, but we see that you're in such a situation of emotional discomfort. You so hate the person you were as you did it. That's what's called charata, which is called regret. Regret is able to, it's less of an intellectual, right? The first one is more of an intellectual, like you just, there's a piece missing, so the whole system falls. The code doesn't work, right? That's what's happening. The charata is essentially saying, on an emotional level, I'm changing what I willed. Now, interesting enough, there are different halachic applications, because Pesach actually means to say that retroactively it didn't exist, because it couldn't have, right? There was a 6 year piece of information that you were missing, so it's gone. Whereas charata only, according to many opinions, only stops me kind of lahabo there onwards. Interesting, very interesting halachic. But the point is that there are two regular options. The question that all the poskim can deal with is what is called nidre? How does called nidre and hataras nedarim work? Is that generally what it might be? Is it might be saying, making what's called a condition, saying anything I will say, Hashem, disregard. I'm not. It's like sort of it's a preamble to anything you will say in the year. Others understand that it's actually retroactively looking at that year and saying, anything I did, I regret. Okay, so there's different ways of going about this. But the point I'm trying to bring to the table over here is there are viable halachas of removing a neder. Okay, so that's going to now strengthen our question as to what Yiftach was not doing. Or,
can I just ask,
yes.
This took place before the Talmud was, and the people from that era were there to talk about how to make the laws. So, and the same thing with Kol Nidre. It didn't happen until much later on in history. So why would that be applicable to this?
Okay, good. So very good question.
Then, perhaps because the people then were more primitive in their thinking.
But that would be part of the Messiah.
Like what Dina said.
So yeah, he has an interesting point. He has an interesting point, yeah. So, well, there was the we spent a little bit of time on this last year, which is that in the Oral Torah itself, there really are essentially three sections. And one section is that which was transmitted at Sinai. And although it wasn't written down till the times of the Second Temple, or the end of the Second Temple, it was the extent as a tradition. So, for instance, an example would that be that when the Torah says "Lakachtem lachem pri etz hadar," that we know for a fact that that's a citron. Why do we know it's a citron? Meaning, there are other fruits which could fit the description just as well if it was a logical exercise. You could say, well, you know, mangoes are also pri etz hadar. They're wonderful. They taste good, and all the kind of great things. But we have a tradition from Sinai that it was the esrog. So when you look in the Gemara and you see all the drashas are essentially saying, trying to show you how the words fit the tradition. because we have the tradition already. Other things are traditions which are derived, meaning they were actually, Hashem gave us the tools, and he said, if using the toolbox that you get, you can now fix and create more, right? That's another option of Torah Sheval Peh. That was developed later on. It seems to be, and one could question this, but most people assume that the laws of Hataras Nedarim, which come from that first section of Parashas Matos, which is where it talks about Nedarim, seem to be a tradition more than there is some elements, like certainly the Kol Nidre, which was a practice only much, much, much later, and so on. But the idea of what's called Hafara, the Torah talks already about Hafara. How does that operate? So the tradition fills us in, but there's an idea of Hatara and Hafara. Hafara is annulling, and Hatara is, right? So that's, but again, you're right. But it seems to be that he has that option. That we're assuming in that sense that it was a tradition more than a derivation. Jess, there was another question.
Just when you were talking about the Charata, it seems like the Ramban's explanation, Chazal's explanation of Yiftach's personality is consistent because he's constantly putting the onus of the situation on someone else.
Right.
So he never really takes personal responsibility for any of this.
Correct.
And so I wonder if he then had this opportunity, he knew the laws, this charata, is he even capable of doing that?
Right, so that's interesting. You know, because on the one hand, he should essentially have both options here. Mm-hmm. On the one hand, intellectually, he didn't know what was going to walk out the door. Right? So if you'd ask him and interview him straight afterwards, you know, and you say, Yiftach, what were you expecting this? He'd say, absolutely not. So he has a Pesach more than anything else. But more subtly, what you're saying is, even if it came down to Charata, he's the kind of person we're going to see who doesn't back down. Okay? Who doesn't back down. And that might be emphasizing that character flaw of his. Okay? So what I'd like to do with you just for a few minutes is to read some of the issues that we're really struggling with in the actual Medrash, and see how they address them. It's quite extraordinary to see how sharply they word this. We're going to just address a few concerns here. What I'd like to start with is on page 9. Page 9 is where it says the Medrash Tanchumetz in the white box, and there on the first line, I'm going to just do the first four lines for the moment. The Medrash says the following. Davar acher, another explanation, ish ki afli neder berkecha nefasha. So if a person makes a neder, makes a decision to give a soul in his family, what's going on over here? He says, zeh shakos of Omer, this is what the pasuk says, pri tzadik eitz chayim, v'lokech nefashas chacham. The fruit of a righteous person is the tree of life, and a person who takes souls is wise. Okay, very esoteric sounding pasuk in Mishle. Okay, so what's that got to do with Nedarim? What's taking lives and wise people and righteous people got to do with Nedarim? Says the Medrash in explaining this, Im ye adam tzadik, if you have a person who is a righteous, well-meaning, caring individual, va'af al pi shehu tzadik ve'eno osek b'torah en b'yada klum, but as well-meaning and as nice as he is, he doesn't have Torah knowledge, then he doesn't have anything. Why? Ela pri tzadik eitz chayim zu Torah. A person, what is the pri tzadik? What is the fruit of a righteous person? When he has the eitz chayim, when he has the tree of life, which is Torah, shmitoch shuhu ben Torah hu lamad heach lokeach nefashos. When a person learns Torah, they know when and when not to, it's appropriate to take life. Right? There are situations where it's necessary, capital punishment is necessary, but there's times when it's completely unnecessary and destructive. So what's the example? Shim yadur la'erech nefashos hu lamad min haTorah hayach oseh v'im en biyadur Torah en biyadur klum. If a person makes a neder to give souls, right, meaning there is the option in the Torah, what that means to say is you give the value of the person. You say, I'm going to give a neder to Hashem to the value of myself, of the value of my wife, of my child. Then what you do is there's a certain valuation process based on age and gender, and you give that value to the Beis HaMikdash. Okay, great. In the end of the day, meaning what you're essentially saying is the Torah has guided you how to do that.
Right.
But if a person, the end of the line is, we're in the fourth line, Kenata motzebi yiftach ha-giladim ibnei shelo hoya ben Torah avad es bitai. Because he wasn't a ben Torah, he lost his daughter. So here you have something interesting. So Dina was saying a little earlier. You may have a person who may have even been a tzaddik. He may have even been a well-meaning person. You can argue how much we're going to credit him with. But you may have the most well-meaning person in the world, but in the end of the day, if you don't have the direction, if you don't have the way in which to guard that well-meaningness, it may end up being killing somebody. So the Midrash is saying is Yiftach was ignorant. Yiftach was ignorant. So his first mistake was, is when you're a leader and you make very complicated decisions, you need to know, you need to have the shoulders to make those decisions. That's number one. Okay, so it's a critique. Do you see there's a critique on him from a knowledge basis? That's critique number one. Don't worry, we're not done yet. Okay, so that's option number one. And this is very interesting. And this is exactly what you were saying before. Exactly what you were saying, right? Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Right? Fair?
Yeah, it's fine. You said
not to talk. And you're listening?
We're trying so hard. I'm really proud of us. I just want to say
I'm
that.
A student.
So how about this? What we're going to do is let's finish the two sections. I want to finish like two sections of Midrash here and then consider it in as well. I know, I'm sorry, there's a lot of comments that people are stifling. I'm sorry.
I can see. But you as women, what do you expect?
So what we're going to do is the following. I'd like to just read with you two sections which really scream out at us about what's going on over here. The next section is jumping down to the next paragraph where it says, argument between Yiftach and his daughter. The voice which is really apparently missing over here more than anybody else's is his daughter. Right? So the Midrash addresses this lost voice. It says, starting from the beginning of the paragraph, Kevon Shibikesh Lakarva, when he wanted to sacrifice, and remember in Chazal's literature, Lakarva means literal sacrifice, right? Means to say, you know, knife on altar kind of thing, right? Then, Hoysa Bocher Lefanov, she would cry in front of him, Omer Eloi, Bitzoi, Avi, Yatzasi Lekroscha B'simcha, I came out to meet you in happiness, meaning I was making a whole procession because I was so happy for you. V'ata Shochetozi, and you're going to kill me? Shema Kosav HaKadosh Baruch, B'toro Sheyu Yisrael Makrivim Lefin HaKadosh Baruch Nafshas Adam? Did the Torah ever demand human sacrifice? There's one instance where yes,
yeah.
we're going to think about that. Is the Akedah. Okay? Ainksiv b'Torah does not say in the Torah, Adam ki akriv mikem korban Hashem mina behema. If a person chooses to sacrifice what a behema, an animal. So she says mina behema v'lo mina b'nei Adam. The Torah seems to emphasize the fact that the object of sacrifice is only an animal. So he responds to her, he says, look, this is what I said. I said anything coming out of our doors is going to be an ola. Shema kol anoder yachol hu l'shalem shelo l'shalem nidroi. So he says, look, I'm stuck. I have to pay my neder. Now we know he's not stuck, but what is he doing? He's stamping his foot, right? He's holding on to what he said. Amra le, she says to him, v'arei Yaakov avinu shenoder kol asher titzen li. She says to him, look, he has another good point she brings up. Yaakov says, everything you give me, he's about to leave in the beginning of Parshas Vayetze. He's going down to Haran, and he says, anything that comes to you give me, God, I will give you a tenth of. Sarah Sernulach, she has a fantastic question. What's the question? Yaakov was blessed with 12 children. That was the end of two Parshas and a half ago. So, Shema, Hikriva Kodesh Baruch Hu Echad Mehem. Did you see Yaakov sacrificing one of them? After all, he said to God, I'm going to give you one tenth of everything I got. The best things he got was his children. So, and he says, Elo chano she'omro tzvatidoch neder, v'atomar Hashem tzvakot im ra'or tir'eh. Chano says about her child that Hashem, she will give him to you, to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Shema hikriva es b'no lifne HaKadosh Baruch Hu, did she sacrifice her son? By the way, this is an interesting point because...
Later, how
exactly. This is an interesting point, is that the Medrash is superimposing this incident because Chana is at the beginning of Sefer Shmuel Aleph, and this hasn't occurred yet. So it's not clear if the Torah is... If the Medrash is putting words into her mouth in terms of just how absurd his logic is. That's what sounds like is going on over here. But B'ezemesh has brought three really, really good arguments, right? And the Medrash says, Kol advarim ha'elu amrullah. She said everything to him. Didn't listen. Here comes back to Jesse's point. He is not prepared to listen. He's not prepared to change. Kevon shiras shalay shamala amrala hanichu ve'ered ve'etzal beistin. So she says, you know what? You're not going to change. I'll find a change. I'll go to beistin. We'll straighten this out. Maybe there is a way to get out of your neder. Shneimar har pe mimeni shneimos shneim chadashim ve'elcha ve'yoradeti el ha'arim. She asked for 2 months to go where? To go down to the mountains. Now, the Medrash points out something interesting. Amar Rabbi Zerachariah, v'chiyesh adam yorede le'harim, v'alo b'nei adam olim le'harim. Usually, mountains are at an ascent. So when you're going to the mountains, the verb used to describe it is to go up.
It depends where you are starting from.
Right? So, regularly speaking, if the mountain's right next to you, the necessary action is an ascent rather than a descent.
Right.
And so why is she saying, let me go down to the mountains? Says the Midrash, Mahu v'yaradati el al ha'arim, elu Sanhedrin. Kamo shenema shimu harim ezriv Hashem. Let the mountains hear the argument of God referring to the Sanhedrin. So says the Midrash, Ha'ocha etzlam v'loy matzo pesach liyiftach she'elim ha'kodosh baruch hu mehem es ha'alacha. Shelo yimsu pescha le'nidrei. She went to them, and they, for some reason, God didn't allow them to see the answer of the truth. Now, that could be a indictment of them. It could be an indictment of the generation.
Well, there was Sanhedrin
right? Then. What was that? Obviously, they're missing out an incredible amount of information to be able to do this. This might be an indication of the generation that they're living in, but it also might be an indication of the responsibility or perhaps the care put into it. Is this a question of because it's a mistake because they weren't learned enough, or is this a mistake because they didn't care enough? Right? We have to question what's being said over here. What this Medrash is doing is a very important piece here. It's filling in that society. She was banging on the doors of society. What was society essentially doing? They were ignoring her. She was being torn off the walls of the court to her neder. Unbelievable. Unbelievable. Now the final responsible person.
I think because they couldn't go against him.
Oh, so that's interesting. Meaning maybe Yiftach was so strong. Maybe Yiftach was such
a
strong...
He was, because we hear that he became also...
the head of the Anashim Reikim.
No, not because Anashim Reikim.
The Rosh.
He became Rosh.
The Rosh and the Katzim.
And the Katzim.
So you see, Yiftach is a person who wields a lot of power. We'll see just how much power next week as well. He's a very powerful person. And that's part of his complex of not being able to let go. And so you see over here, it might be a third option is not just ignorance, not just lack of care, but perhaps fear as well, which is also throws in an extra element into this drama.
What
right?
do you think was going to come out of his door? A cow or a sheep?
Not clear.
Walking out by itself.
Not clear. You know, it could be in those days. Actually, I read an architect.
Thumbs. They can't open the doors.
I read a magazine. Somebody brought me a magazine about Near Eastern archaeology. And they were doing research into this era as to what lives in people's houses.
Is that Michael?
And this is a few years ago. Somebody gave me this magazine, and there was a whole paper written as to this. And one of the points was that they say that they pointed out that in those days that in fact the livestock or the precious livestock would live in the house. So the higher likelihood was that their precious things walking out of the house. Remember, he only has one daughter. Would most likely be their chickens or their goats or whatever else is staying in their house, interestingly enough. So there's been studies done on this, there's an interesting paper written on this, but that might be put towards that. I want to just put in the last thread over here, and that is there's another silent character. And this is a very sad, part of the story. This is perhaps the biggest tragedy of the whole thing. Is drop down to the fourth paragraph. The wife does not feature in this, not sure if she's around. In the last section, which is called Pinchas and Yiftach, it's on the top of page 10. In the second box, it says Pinchas and Yiftach in the heading. It says, this is the end of this Midrash, this is a Midrash Bereshis Rabbah. It says, V'lohaya Shom Pinchas Shiatir Es Lois Nidroi. Was Pinchas not there to undo the Minedor? Now, how do we know that Pinchas was there? The Midrash is not just sort of, you know, magically extending Pinchas's life. How do we know that Pinchas actually was living at this time, although he didn't feature? The reason is, we're going to get to, hopefully, in the next few months, is at the very tail end of Shoftim, there's going to be an incident called Pilegesh Begiva, and at that incident, Pinchas appears. Which means to say that he's going to appear explicitly in the Pasuk. You don't need a Medrash for this. So that means to say that, therefore, you have to look back at all tragedies in Sefer Shoftim, if the story is really dated at the end of Sefer Shoftim. It's not clear if that is. But if it is, then essentially you have a void of Pinchas's involvement in society. And most notably over here, you have a person like Pinchas in society. Okay, Sanhedrin. But Pinchas is also a strong man, right?
But he's a Kanai.
He's a Kanai, so he should be all the more so be the person jumping in right here. One second.
That he lived such a long time
Yes. That's part of what the bris of shalom of Pinchas was. Part of the covenant of peace that Pinchas was given was, a number of explanations said that he was granted peace against the angel of death, that he was granted a longevity. By the way, it's also interesting to note that that medrash which compares Pinchas to Eliyahu, it's interesting to note that Eliyahu is also the character in Nach who sort of has an extended lifespan, and Pinchas is the similar character. He just went up and never really died. Pinchas also has a certain sense of longevity. But be it as it may, what was he doing? Why was he silent? Certainly, the person who should have been a Kanai, who should have been the zealot in this situation, why is he not here? Why is he not acting as he should? Ella, says the Medrash, Pinchas Amar, Hu Tzorech Li Vani Eilech Etzlai, Pinchas says, he needs me, I'm going to go to him, right? It's not just in different departments, Lahavdil, of offices, right? This is Lahavdil, what's going on over here? Yiftach Amar, Ani Rosh Kitzinei Yisrael. Yiftach says, I'm the head, I'm the general, right? Vani Holech Li Etzel Pinchas, I'm going to go to the priest, Pinchas. Bein Dain Ledain of the Hanarahi. Between those two, the girl was lost. Says the Medrash, Hada Debraisa Amra, that's what the teaching tells us. Bein Chayasa Mechabelta Ozol Bro La Da Lufta. Right, this is an Aramaic phrase which says that between the midwife and the mother, the child is lost. Meaning, each one expects the other one to be doing the work, and who's doing the work? No one. Right.
Sheds very bad light on him.
And on both of them. And says the Medrash, therefore, Veshnehem Nen Shubidameo Shel Nara, and both of them were punished. You see, the tragedy doesn't end here, unfortunately. It's not just the story. They were both punished. Yiftach Meis Benashila Sevarim. Yiftach died in a form of disease where his limbs came off one by one. At the end of his life, wherever he'd go, unfortunately he'd be falling apart literally. They'd have to bury him. The indication for this isn't just made up, is where does it come from? Look at the pasuk. The pasuk says, "Vayomas Yiftach vayikover ba'arei Gilad." Yiftach died and he was buried in the cities of Gilad. Be'ir Gilad lo ne'emar ela ba'arei Gilad. It doesn't say he was buried in one location. He was buried in many locations. So this is an indication that unfortunately he had to be buried in multiple locations because of the type of death that he suffered. And finally, Pinchas not lo mimenu haruach hakodesh. Pinchas lost his divine inspiration. Ha'udirsiv, that's why it says in Dira Yamim, when it relating to Pinchas, Pinchas ben Elazar nagid haya aleihem. Pinchas, the son of Elazar, was the greatest leader. And what does the Midrash pick up on? What's the problem in that pasuk? Was. Says the Midrash, Nagid aleihem ein ksiv kan. It doesn't say he is. Ela nagid haya lifnim Hashem amoim. He was in the days. Meaning to say, he's a star that sank out of existence. And that's what you see over here. That's the tragedy is between, we'll call it this, the arrogance or the lack of willingness to move between the two of them. She loses, they lose. This is the real tragedy. Is nobody over here is a winner. Nobody here is coming out on top. Throughout the story, lots to learn from this. Lots to consider as a whole. Anyways, questions, thoughts, comments. Yes.
Is it possible to suggest that this happened because women were not valued that much?
I don't know.
I actually was thinking about it because when Hannah dedicates Shmuel, then Shmuel has a part. He can go to Beit HaMikdash. Mm-hmm. What can women do? How can they be dedicated to Avodat HaKodesh? There isn't.
That's a very interesting point. I don't know. I never thought about it from that perspective. I actually don't think I remember seeing anybody talk about it from that perspective either. So what you're saying is that perhaps over here is the role of women in society. Not sure. What I have seen is that a theme, another theme that we're going to have to sort of explore. Well, perhaps we'll start this next time, just as a little finish up, is the idea of sacrifice in general. And sacrifice does seem to go across the spectrum because she's going to be grouped together with the child of Edom and Yitzchak and all the people in sacrifice. And there it doesn't seem to matter whether it's man or woman. You know, in Greek mythology, Iphigenia was a woman who sort of bore the same kind of tragic sacrifice. So I don't know. I haven't thought about it more enough to think about that. Any other questions, comments, thoughts at this point?
We're speechless.
Well, it is unfortunate. It really is makes one speechless when thinking about this. What I'd like to do is, God willing, this coming.